I love that. I don't even notice it in my videos. And then I'm like, do you have the train? I'm like, no.
You don't even notice it. I've noticed it more now than I've ever noticed it before, ever since working in this office for the last few years. But when I worked here previously, never heard the train.
No, it's weird, isn't it?
Never heard it. It's a fantastic hoot, isn't it?
Every time, same place. It must have to do it. Must.
Yeah, it's just as it comes into the station.
Oh, is it? Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
To let everyone know coming in.
But it doesn't stop at that station.
Stops at Jerston?
It doesn't.
Does it not?
No.
Oh, maybe because it's going past the station then.
It goes directly one way now. It doesn't stop at all.
Hmm.
I can't remember who it was. Someone was telling me about it. It just literally goes painting to Kingsway. No stops.
Question. Anything good in the golf bag right now?
What that I've got?
Yeah.
No, I need to sort out my... So I'm happy with my 2-iron's back. I suppose that's good, isn't it?
What, the ping?
Yeah, that's back in the bag.
Oh, yeah,
but
nice.
I need to get my... I don't think it's the answer, but my lob wedge has got, like, not enough bounce, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because I chip okay with my 54 and 50, which has got more bounce. 54's got 14 degrees of bounce. But my lob wedge, I play the same technique, but it's not as good.
No,
the outcome's not as good, so I'm going to try and get a wedge with loads of bounce.
Okay.
So that's what I'm looking at the moment. But that's the only change I'm going to make.
And you're going to get that in your lob
wedge, yeah.
With lots of bounce.
Loads of bounce. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few floating around here, and do you know there was one wedge that really saved my pitching game for a period of time there, very early on.
Yeah.
Was a Callaway wide sole. One of those Mac Daddies.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
And it was a really, really bouncy, wide sole thing. And I remember I was playing at Trevoux once. And it was a bit bogged, bit wet, because it was winter golf.
Yeah.
And I had this sort of really tough, tight lie, bit wet underneath. Thought, my world, the whole world just felt like it was going to collapse under my shot. You know, one of those shots.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. And I just remember throwing this club into the ground going, and the ball just plopped out lovely. And I thought... Oh, what the build of confidence from that one shot meant that I could throw that club into the deck and then know that the ball's popping out with it as it meanders its way through the turf and out.
Yeah. I just as obviously caddying this week, they all play like they all literally play the same technique now.
Yeah, so talking about your different. Caddying, you've been caddying at Southwest Counties week.
Yeah, I caddied for Paul last year.
Yeah.
At the Open qualifying, which was supposed to be at Burnham. Burnham had a few issues, and so it was moved into Wales to Porthcawl, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which didn't suit Paul because of the fact that he'd won, I think he'd won, has he won the English PGA round? Burnham, he had, didn't he?
No, the Club British, Pro, British,
British
PGA.
British PGA, so it's a course he knew really well, and unfortunately it was moved. But it's back there this year, so I'm going to caddy for him. In a
that
few
a
weeks'
final
time,
qualifying.
Final qualifying, which is what he's exempt from pre-qualifying or local qualifying to go to that. So I'm going to do in the 36 holes for him. So one of the Chester members, Jack, who's been on my channel. I don't think he's been on your channel, has he?
Yeah, I think he has.
Has he?
Pretty sure he has. Don't know.
Don't know if he did a vlog. He might have done the... Did he do the handicap series, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so Jack got picked for Southwest Week, which you and Paul played in, and James.
Yeah.
Gilly previously and Pickard. Well, Pickard was playing this week.
In the Southwest, yeah.
So I went up and caddied for him in the stroke play on the Tuesday. So I've been around the best amateur golfers in the Southwest.
Yeah, so Southwest Counties Week is built up of Cornwall, top 10 or 12 players from Cornwall, Devon, Somerset, Wiltshire, Gloucester. Dorset,
six counties
in the southwest of England.
Yeah,
The
winners of the stroke play, which is a one-day 36-hole, pick six players, all six to count.
Yeah,
they go through to the national finals.
Yes,
and represent the southwest,
which
Devon did, didn't they? I think a couple of times.
Yeah, so when I was playing, I was away in America at the time, didn't get selected for the top six.
No,
and then, which is not a bad thing because they went on to win it. But the team, I mean, I love it when you think about like the top six players and you go through all the different generations of all the players that have kind of played in that top six. I've played in the top six before, just not, never got through.
No.
But I remember Paul's team, well, I was in the team, but wasn't in the six-man team. I remember that team of like, Paul was, I think, plus three.
This is the old system where it was a proper handicap as well, wasn't
James
it?
James Ruth was plus 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Damien G was plus 2 or 3.
Kev Harper.
Kev Harper was certainly plus 2.
Yeah.
Al Gorman was plus 2. Like, it was a really, really strong, hugely strong team. And they and Paul, that's where Paul beat, I think, Paul beat Gary Wolstenholme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, because Gary Wolstenholme beat Tiger Woods in the Walker Cup at Porthcawl, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Paul's claim to fame was that he beat Tiger Woods. He beat the guy that beat Tiger Woods, therefore he's beaten Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
So then everybody that's beaten Paul ever has claimed to beaten Tiger Woods.
Yeah. So yeah, so I went up and did the 36 holes. Jack wasn't in the top six, but he still played in the stroke play event.
Yeah.
Devon have got one or two outstanding players who are probably a level above the other sort of seven or eight players.
Okay.
So it
That's
was
normal.
Which basically meant that it was a toss up between the last sort of seven, eight players who was going to take the spaces, and they went with experience because it's his first Southwest week. But I would be pretty sure next year his score will be in the top. He will be in the top six.
Right.
Played lovely. The course was hard. It was bouncy. They grew the rough up.
Budley?
Budley, East Devon, yeah. Which is featured on the channel before. The greens were like glass.
Were they?
Pins were tucked. Although they said they were putting the pins in what they called easy places, but they were hard to get to.
I mean, if you think about Budley, the greens are very slopey.
Yeah.
There's only one or two that I would say that are pretty flat.
There's quite a few Mackenzies in them.
Well, there's one green. It's got two Mackenzies.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite greedy to have two Mackenzies in one green.
Well, I mean, the par three, that was the temp. So we started on that hole in the first round.
Oh, did you?
Two tee tough start.
A nice one to start on, wasn't it?
Yeah. But it was, the course was spectacular.
Is it lovely in purple with the heathers up there?
It was pretty, but I've not been there since they've done a lot of clearance. We did the video on it. It's gone up a level. Like the views as well. Like you could see over to the sea. You could literally look on a few of the holes and look right the way around the horizon. You could see holes. You could see people. Before it was very enclosed and felt almost claustrophobic.
Yeah.
For me personally, you were just in. And I just liked the fact it was all open. And it was spectacular. And they've done a really good job, East Devon, running it. The Devon team are doing well in the match play as well. They look like they might finish first or second in the match play, which would be good.
Yeah, that'd be good. So Southwest Week, basically, you have one day, which is the Tuesday. It starts, I think, on the Saturday?
Started Sunday. Yeah.
And then it runs through the whole week. So throughout the week, each day you'll play a different match against a different county.
Yeah.
And then on the Tuesday, to break it all up, on the Tuesday you have the individual stroke play, which is the Southwest Championships.
Yeah.
So there's two things that you can win that week. There's obviously the Southwest Championship week bit, and then you've got the match play stuff, which is again, and then they select from that. If you finish, basically, if you do really well in the match play and you pick up the most points for your county, then chances are you're going to be selected then for then a 10-man team, which then you represent the Southwest of England
to play against the
Midlands match, which I never got either.
No, I didn't even play Southwest. We got close.
Yeah.
Your brother let me down.
Did he?
Yeah, because somebody won the amateur.
Yeah.
If he hadn't have won the amateur, I was in the team. I was basically what would have been the 10th man, and he basically won the amateur. So you have to have the amateur champion in the team, don't you? You couldn't not have him, which he wouldn't have got picked, I don't think.
Yeah. And what's so important about Southwest Week, for those that have any interest whatsoever, is you don't get your blazer badge. You don't get your badge for your blazer, your county badge, unless you play at Southwest Week.
Yeah.
So even though you could represent Devon, as you did, represented Devon in lots of Channel League matches, which is again against all those Southwest teams, plus a couple of Welsh counties as well, you don't get your badge, unfortunately.
No.
You have to get into the Southwest Week, which it was. I don't know if that's still the case. They might have changed it since then, I don't know. But
that was
always the thing. You get your colours from...
They had some nice kit.
Did they?
Yeah. Jack had some. So he had some head covers with Devon on.
Nice.
Big nice towel. All the drinks and food, everything's provided.
Yeah.
Trousers, a couple of pairs of golf shoes. a couple of hoodies, really nice hoodies.
Yeah.
But they did like a nice touch. So it had the Devon logo on sort of the left breast. And then on the right breast, it said like Southwest Week with a year.
Yeah.
And then on the left sort of shoulder, it had your home club as your logo with your name underneath it. It was proper nice. Classy. Yeah. I was like, that's nice. Yeah.
Who was the brand? Who were they?
It was Footjoy.
Nice.
So it was Footjoy in the trousers and the hoodie.
Yeah.
And then they had some like quarter zip tops as well in red.
Yeah.
The only thing is, the hoodie, I would have thought it had been red.
Want red?
No, it was like a light blue.
Okay.
So whether Footjoy don't do a red, they probably don't.
Oh, they do a red.
They do full
in
red.
In that hoodie, yeah.
All right, well, I would have gone for that. So that was the only thing. That's the only criticism I'd have is like on the stroke play, some were wearing the hoodies. And like Jack was wearing his red jump, like his red
quarter zip. Yeah.
Whereas some of them were wearing the blue hoodie, so it looked a bit, the colours were a bit...
You didn't know who was playing for who?
No, it was more difficult to differentiate from the teams. But yeah, no, it was really well run. Devon would be strong in the next couple of years because they had a lot of... Like, Jack's a rookie. They had quite a few rookies.
Is he a rookie?
Yeah, his first time. He's only played one Channel League match before.
Amazing. Before you know it, you could be county captain.
Wow, no.
Imagine that. County captain, Bernie.
I don't know. No, it's something I would like to give back to golf because I feel like I've given back a lot to football. Like I've managed and run stuff and organised stuff. I haven't really done that golf wise.
Yeah,
I've captained a couple of teams at Churston, but when you're still active playing, it's hard to do the two roles. I think as to your best of ability, but it's something I would like if I was more involved in county stuff, whether I was sort of playing a little bit more in that sort of area. And I mean, I didn't even know. I probably only knew two or three of the players.
Yeah.
In the 10-man team, which you'd be hard to pick a team when you don't know anybody, wouldn't it? You'd have to be involved as vice captain or.
Yeah,
as...
it wouldn't take you long to get into it though, would it?
No.
Wouldn't take you long to get back into that swing of it.
Sam Dunn was captain, and George Robinson was vice captain. They've done a really good job, like really well organised, and the lads were.
I would imagine it's quite hard to get captains because a lot of them turn pro, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. You almost want a player who is. Played, but it doesn't want to be involved as a player, but still wants to have a bit of
an input.
Yeah, an input into the county. That's probably your best bet rather than having 20 years out and coming back in because you've not got a lot in common with them. I would say the captains. That would be the biggest difference from our day. It was, you know, they were in their 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe even older. Some of them, but they were all around about. They all looked like they could still play.
Yeah,
but there was. The interesting thing, I don't know if you found, you'd know more about it than me, the level, the ages was so varied. I mean, you had a guy there that played in the Masters, playing for Wiltshire. I would have said he was late 40s, maybe 50s. I don't know his name. I'll have to find his name for you.
Yeah, he must have won the amateur, because that's the only route, unless you win the US amateur,
or
US mid-amateur, not mid-amateur, anyway.
He had something to do with Jack Nicklaus, whether he'd played with him as well. It was like he'd done, but I would have said he was in his 50s, but still playing county golf, which is quite impressive.
Right.
And still competing.
Because there was one, who was he playing for? Wiltshire.
I want to say Wiltshire, yeah.
Not Dorset, definitely not Dorset. I know who it is.
I don't know, I wouldn't be able to tell you what county. It wasn't.
It's a guy called Lee James.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, he won the amateur championships.
Right, okay, that's how he's done it.
And then he played in the Masters. Yeah, that's right. Lee James.
Okay.
Who turned pro for a little while.
Yeah.
Did quite well, won a couple of Challenge Tour events.
Right.
And never really kicked on,
A few years ago then?
Yeah.
I mean, what would you put his age at?
Yeah, he's a similar age to, I would say mid-50, like 50, yeah. 50 to 55.
Yeah, so I would have put him at early 50s.
Yeah, so it's a few years before
Swings
us.
It good still. Hits it good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's impressive, isn't it?
You'd have thought he might have had a go on the seniors, wouldn't you? I don't know, money in it, Legends Tour.
He's probably gone back to amateur. He's probably got a job and does his thing from there. So, you know, it's an impressive record, though, from what he's got.
Yeah.
Talk about impressive. And the idea of this podcast is
I've
to
just
more,
gone off and...
It's great, love it. But I think it would be good to get into our adventures in Ireland.
Yeah.
Because the videos are now kind of all out, really, apart from a couple from my side. I know you've got all yours kind of out, and then we've got that one from Port Marnock that's got to go out with with Al.
That's the only outstanding one I got now. From there. Everything else is on the channel.
I just wanted to give everyone a bit of a rundown of exactly kind of how that trip went.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a few different ways.
Logistics and stuff are quite good because people probably don't know what we did and how we got there and, and whatnot and the track, you know. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
So we got an invite out there from through Golfing Ireland. So Golfing Ireland are basically the tourism board of in Irish Gulf.
Yeah.
And they're always trying to get the balance between Northern Ireland and obviously Ireland, the island of Ireland. So we were invited out to go out and do a media trip to the kind of west coast, which is kind of like northwest coast, but it's probably mid to northwest coast up in an area called Westport, which was just stunning, wasn't it? And actual for the layout of the town and
it was a really good. I think it's a town. I don't think it's a city, is it?
Not a city, no.
No, it was big enough and had enough amenities. Is that the word? Amenities, pubs, restaurants.
Basically, loads of pubs and loads of restaurants.
Yeah, basically, and it was and shops and stuff. And it was a really good base.
Yeah,
that, like there was lots to do. It was a vibrant town, which seems to be on the rise. And I would say in the next 4 or 5 years, it will be even better than what it. Already is. It was nice and clean, tidy. It was just a lovely place, wasn't it? Friendly. Some really good hotels there. Lots of variety of eating establishments, which was good as well. To cater for everybody. If you wanted to go and get a kebab from the local kebab shop, you could. But if you wanted a more high class meal, you could do that as well.
Yeah, 100%.
If you wanted a typical locals Irish pub, there was them. And if you wanted something a little bit more modern and a little bit more like a gastro pub, there was that as well. So it was. Yeah, it had everything, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Well, we set off from the beautiful English Riviera, which is where we're from.
Yeah.
And we jumped in the van and we made our way down to the southwest coast of Wales.
Which is probably, about five hours?
Yeah, four and a half hours, I think it took us to get there. So a bit of a jaunt.
It's not a bad drive, though, is it?
No.
Did look quite a bit of it on the way back from there. Yeah. It was a decent road.
It's just one road that takes you straight to a place called Fishguard, which is where the port is that we jumped on. And we jumped on the ferry, and it was probably about, I want to say it was like 3.5 to 4 hours across on the ferry. We had a little bit of luxury, didn't we?
I guess it was the Irish Golfing Ireland had upgraded us.
Yeah, I think they must have.
Which... We're in sort of the what do you want to say? Like not the executive suite, was it? What would you call it? Like the
let's call it just a lounge,
first class lounge.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it was first class.
No, it might not be first class, but it was pretty
traveler's lounge.
Yeah, which is brilliant. So it was there was like help yourself to as many drinks as you want.
I have never eaten that many packets of crisps in my life.
It wasn't necessarily. It was finger food, I'd call it. It was crisps, cakes,
olives.
Lots of cheese and olives, which I demolished quite a lot of, sun-dried tomatoes, some fruit, some chocolates.
I didn't know anyone, certainly of your size, could pop in that much cheese
I certainly got my money's, well, I didn't pay for it, so I got, Golfing Ireland did very well out of me, I think, from out I ate.
Yeah, we did them proud, didn't we?
I'd like to have filmed how much I actually managed to consume in that 3.5, 4 hours. And yeah, it was really nice and
busy,
it was good,
though.
Wasn't it? It was busy. Yeah, I mean, when we the first going over there, we struggled to get a seat near a plug.
That's always an issue.
Which we were sort of in the middle of the room, which ideally you'd want to be on the outskirts because there was plugs. It was slightly more luxury. The seats were what I would say more comfortable and it was just all nicer.
Didn't stop us having a snooze though.
No, we had a 20 winks or so, didn't we? And we got a bit of editing done and. You know, a few social media posts, which was good.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was good little luxury, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it wasn't rolling, was it? Because it's always a bit of a shame if you... I don't mind a ferry rolling if I'm going to bed, if I'm going to sleep.
So I've never experienced a bad ferry crossing.
No. They're quite big boats,
which,
aren't they?
I mean, even when we came back from France, and I'm going off the subject here, but they actually... I'd say the pilot, is it? It's the
skipper
of the boat. He basically came on, didn't he, and said that it's going to be because it was when the storms were. It was like March time, So it might be slightly choppy and slightly rough crossing, but I didn't feel anything.
No, was that a night ferry?
Yeah, we got on about 10. We didn't go to bed till midnight, but it was it wasn't rolling or anything. It was fine.
I actually kind of like it when it rolls a little bit, because it rolls me off to sleep.
Yeah.
But I have been on ferries where there's been some incidents, should we say, where the people I'm travelling with have been seasick.
Have you? Yeah. I mean, I used to think I used to get seasick, but I worked out it was the 6-7 pints I was drinking on the crossing, which was making me ill, rather than the actual ferry crossing itself.
Yeah, I've experienced that with you as well, and it's fun. It's fun. But yes, we got in, again, I call it a fishing town, little ferry port down there, Rosslare.
Yeah, which again was nice, wasn't it? I'd have stayed in there.
Yeah, lovely.
Nice, isn't it?
Yeah, lovely little spot. And then the unfortunate thing for us was then it was 5 hours travelling in the van from that. So we'd done 4.5, hung around at the ferry port for about an hour and a half, jumped on the ferry, did 4 hours, let's say, on the ferry, and then trudged 5 hours.
We did break it up by stopping for dinner, didn't we?
We did, yeah. That was quite nice. That was right, not far away from the K Club we stopped. So you head kind of up the coast, up the east coast, up to Dublin, and then you kind of scoot around the edge of Dublin, and then you go straight across.
I guess if you went a direct route, it's more too rural, isn't it?
You'd be there for hours. You'd be there for days travelling through there.
It seemed to be quite a detour to get to where we were going to, didn't it?
Yeah, massively.
It was up north and then across sort of west rather than going direct route. Probably mileage, it'd be like 100 miles longer, I would have thought. But obviously it's better roads.
Got to our destination about 11:30 at night, straight into bed. And then, maybe closer to midnight, I think, probably was it.
Up quite early then, weren't we?
And then up early to visit our first venue, first golf course.
Yeah.
Now, we were on this trip. It was what they call a media trip, which means you get a couple of different types of trips. You get a media trip and then you get a fam trip. And a fam trip is like a familiarization trip. Those trips are generally done with travel agents.
Yeah.
So people that set up golf trips. So your big ones like Your Golf Travel and Golf Breaks and Golfing Days and Graham Ruth, who we deal with Bonjour Golf a lot. Like, they will get offered trips to go and familiarise themselves with the location.
They're selling the holiday and the product, don't they? So they need to experience it and know where to go, that extra bit of information, else you wouldn't use them, would you?
Yeah, so I have been on both familiarisation trips and media trips, and just all you've got is just different people.
Yeah.
So the media trips are generally, you're going to find people like us who do YouTubing videos.
We were the only YouTubers, video creators.
And then you get press people, so people that write for magazines, people that write for newspapers.
Yeah.
So you get lots of different types of people that turn up, and it's always quite nice to meet all these different people because you do.
They're
bump
a really
into
good
them.
Bunch.
Yeah,
well.
You do bump into them again, and also it opens up opportunities and doors that you don't know what might be around the corner with certainly media opportunities. And
I'd say the only thing it lacked, it'd be nice to play golf with a few of them.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's difficult because we were filming every day and we were trying to get footage, and it wasn't possible. But I mean, that would have been quite nice to have
It would have been, and I have done that in the past. But it can be a little bit difficult because ultimately they just want to just play golf, and our pace of play is not going to be what their pace of play is. So a little bit difficult. But so our first port of call, which was about an hour away, I think, in the bus ride, was Enniscrone.
Yeah, lovely golf course. Back nine was particularly
spectacular.
Impressive.
However, you think about the first few holes.
Although, I was going to say,
And amongst those dunes.
Yeah,
and then
when you came out of the dunes and you were right by that par five, which I think was the second.
Yeah.
That was literally right by, or right on the water's edge, which was just all I can compare that to really is Trevose. Anyone that's played Trevose, I think it's the fifth hole, and you come par five, and you turn the corner, and then you're greeted with some spectacular coastal scenery.
Yeah.
It was really impressive. But the back nine was open style, wasn't it? It opened up slightly. You were played right along the coast, massive dunes. You could see a bit of the town. What a great golf course that was.
But what is interesting, and even moving on to the second course that we played in a minute, but I have never seen dune complexes that big. No. Like, And maybe it's because of the fact that it is on the west coast of Ireland and there's not a lot of stopping the wind and everything coming into that coast there. It just must just blow those dunes over the years, just blown them up.
Yeah.
Because they were literally...
They're like dunes on steroids, aren't they?
Dunes on steroids. That's exactly what I was thinking just there.
It was... So again, another comparison. St. Enedoc have got the Himalaya Bunker, which again, I think is on about the fifth or sixth hole. Everything was as big as that, wasn't it?
Huge.
It was unbelievable. It was all banked in. It was a great golf course. Greens were good. We had a bit of dodgy weather. The only day we really had any dodgy weather, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Started off, we hit one shot off the first and ran into the clubhouse for about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
To shelter from the rain, because cameras and rain do not mix.
Not very well.
But yeah, the weather was good. Yeah, golf course was good, wasn't it?
Favourite hole?
Oof, that's a very good one. So I like the par 3 towards the end. Didn't play it particularly well, to be fair, but I think it was it 17?
Well, 17, 17 was where we had to fiddle those clubs in.
Just a spectacular par 3, that.
Yeah, I got up and down from the bottom.
Yeah.
Did you get up and down from the edge? No.
Don't think I did, no.
Oh, but that was
a lovely par 3.
That was like... That's going to be the equivalent. That green is going to be a very similar to what they're going to get at the US Open.
Yeah.
Which means big the green, runoffs and, massive runoffs. So yeah. The green actually is quite big.
Yeah.
But the actual playing surfaces of the green are quite small.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of runoffs within the green.
There was loads of spectacular holes, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. I really enjoyed the... it was a par 5, and I think it was around the 14th, which you had a bit of a blind second shot, but you had to work your way... you go up through this valley of beautiful dunes, and then you have to go over the big dune if you're going for it in two, or you go up to the left. We should have both made birdies there, but we didn't. Yeah. I know it was a little bit blind with your second shot, but still the structure of that hole and what it asked of you was just fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic golf hole. Enniscrone. Now, the other thing that Enniscrone... which was really quite cool, was that Shane Lowry said...
Oh, he did, yeah. I said it was Darren Clarke.
You said it was Clarkey, yeah. But actually it was Shane Lowry that said that Enniscrone is the best of the off-beaten tracks.
Yeah.
And what he kind of means by that is that it's one of those golf courses that is literally, you know, it's a little bit in the middle, it's a little bit out of the middle of nowhere, shall we say. And that's what he's calling it, as an off-beaten track. So it's nothing majorly close to it.
No.
But what, and I can 100% see what it means, because it was just spectacular.
It's almost one of those courses that you're doing a bit of travelling and you stumble across it and be like, oh, let's play a bit of golf. And then you're just probably not expecting to be greeted with such spectacular scenery in a golf course, which is, it's class, wasn't it?
And I think we upset a few people because we did call it a hidden gem, which apparently in Ireland it's not a hidden gem.
I think it's mainly because we are pretty far away from Ireland, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we just, you know, that's my first trip other than to Dublin. I haven't ventured into Ireland and I've never been that far. We've never been that far west, have we? We wouldn't make that trip unless golf in Ireland was sending us there, would we?
No,
it wouldn't
absolutely
be one
right.
where you'd plan. So for us, it's not... I mean, Irish people have obviously heard of it. I mean, should have heard of it, because it's pretty spectacular, isn't it?
Talk about spectacular, though, Bernie. Day 2.
Yeah.
And the road complex to get out to day 2, Carn Golf Club.
Yeah.
You were feeling a little rough, weren't you? Because it was about an hour and 45-minute drive.
Yeah, it was windy. We went... I mean, yeah, it was along the Irish coast, with some spectacular scenery and views, but it was very up and down. It was very windy.
Yeah.
It was very bumpy. The driver did his best, but the roads probably... Well, they were the worst roads I'd been on.
Ever.
Ever.
Don't beat around the bush, buddy.
No, and I struggled, particularly the journey home.
Yeah.
I almost asked him to stop a couple of times to
get
rid of my...
Well,
the contents of my lunch,
air.
Yeah.
Get some fresh air.
I would have only rented my lunch that day. I wouldn't have actually bought it. No. I didn't have it long enough to actually own it.
I feel like I pulled a bit of a smart one there. I realised that
the day before driving to Enniscrone had wiped me out a little bit before we teed off. So I perched myself at the front of the bus next to the driver.
I got as close to as far forward up as I could, but
No, that bus just rolled.
I struggled a little bit on that day.
Carn Golf Club. Or Carn Golf Links,
yeah,
should we call it, because that's what it is.
One of the friendliest places I've ever been.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Welcome with open arms. I mean,
so was Enniscrone. All the courses went to where, to be fair.
Ireland in general is...
Off the beaten track. We turn up, there's literally two cars in the car park.
Yeah.
It's a bit... the way that the golf place runs and how it operates is very much different to anything around there or anything I've seen before. It was mainly volunteers, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah.
Which I mean, there was nothing. It was in the middle of nowhere to start with, so there wasn't. They didn't have the chimney pots around it for membership, and they have international members, don't they?
They do. And whilst we're on that, though, because I think even though you and I can talk about it and give it our thumbs up, which absolutely we can, we actually caught up with Jerry Maguire. Spelling slightly different from Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise and Show Me the Money.
Yeah.
But Jerry Maguire, who is... Well, let's clip over to Jerry Maguire now and just catch up with him and see what he has to say about it all.
Jerry.
Dan.
What an absolute pleasure this is to have the opportunity to play one of the most fantastic links golf courses in the west coast of Ireland.
Well, it's great to have you. You know, we rely on you guys. To spread the word. We didn't do it for a long time. We're open since 85. We went through very lean years. I came in 1999 from Dublin.
Yeah.
I said, when I arrived here, I'm never going to do this again. That was before I saw the golf course and the hospitality of Belmullet. And I just couldn't believe how good the golf course was and that I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah.
And that was the start of a whole new life for me. While I was working in Dublin, I used to come down here for the weekends, couldn't get enough of it. When I retired, bought a house in the meantime. And then when I retired, they asked me to get involved. And we have a great team here. And towards the late sort of teens in the 2000s, we started pushing it through social media.
Yeah.
And we got lucky with a few nice people who came and said a nice few things about us. And gradually word of mouth. And we were able to, because of additional business, we were able to reinvest. There's been no investment here for 25 years. So obviously everything suffers, both the clubhouse, the locker rooms, the course itself. And we had a beautiful new nine that we couldn't open because we hadn't got the money nor the resources.
Right.
Luckily enough, we had a great greenkeeper in Fergus who arrived on the scene and he said, we must open it. Give me the money and I'll sort it. And we made sure we gave him the money. And once we did that, we created the Wild Atlantic Dunes course. We opened it in May of 20. And when people started to play that, they just couldn't get over. Every hole was just, you know, they were in awe of every hole. And indeed, many of the people who came, like yourselves, they ran out of film after three holes because they thought after three holes it couldn't get better.
Yeah.
But of course, it got even better and better all the time.
But 1985, is that
1985, right? Five business people, great people in the town. There was no industry here in Belmullet.
Okay.
So they thought maybe they could build a golf course out here. This piece of land was God's land, really, but sheep had been grazed on it by 15 farmers.
Right.
So they bought the 15 farmers out. They ran keg sales. They ran raffles. They were helped by Fáilte Ireland and the local state agency, Uaid Ros na Gaeltachta, because this is an Irish region, speak Irish. And between the whole lot, they were able to set up the course. And of course, they couldn't have done it without the great Eddie Hackett. This was his last course to design.
Right.
And he did it on the back of the Irish Independent, the newspaper. No computers, no nothing. And he was very insistent that the course would not be, nothing would change too much. So the greens you saw today are on natural elevations that were there when he arrived. They just tweaked it a little bit. Took 8 years to build. People off the labour exchange. Shovels and spades. No machinery allowed in. And even today, we don't allow machinery in.
Wow.
Because we have to keep it as natural as possible.
Yeah. And it is. And I mean, just playing the first few holes that we've played, it's just
so natural.
Stunning.
Yeah. And I think that just probably keeps us a little bit apart from everywhere else. We're raw and we're rugged. We tried to keep it raw and rugged, but at the same time keep it in good nick.
Yeah.
Great team, as I say, great team. We've only six greenkeepers. They do a wonderful job. We've 28 people employed now, so we're a big employer as well.
Wow.
We've taken back the bar and restaurant, which used to be franchised for 15 years, because we always wanted to make sure if we have quality golf, we'll then have quality food after the golf. Fantastic general manager that came in 2018. She's made the difference, Fiona. Fortunately, she's not here today. She's gone off on a holiday, well deserved.
Yeah.
But she and the team here has just made my life easier as chairman of the board. Great board, great management team, all working for the community. And we're not for profit at the end of the day. So our green fees are not as dear as other places. And we've plenty of availability because we've 27 holes. And everybody is welcome to come.
Talking about local community, though, I mean, you say it's for the local community. I mean, just sort of expand on that just a little bit for us.
Well, our company is Ayres Tourism, so it was set up on behalf of the community to work the golf course and trust for the community. So at the end of the day, if anything happened to this place, any money that would derive from here would actually go back into more tourism projects within the community.
Wow.
Nobody makes any money. There's no dividend for board of directors. I'm a volunteer. I'm 12 years chairman, voluntary, 24/7. We all do it to make sure that Belmullet and the town works.
Is that quite unique? Is that
very unique? Very unique. We're not a members golf club. Yeah. We're a tourist golf club. We have Belmullet Golf Club here, who play under license, and they're here every Sunday. Great bunch of guys and girls and ladies, and but they're only small in number. They're 80, so their revenue to us would be 70,000-80,000 a year. After that, all our revenue has to come from visitor revenue. So 99% has to come from visitors. And the window is only from April to October, because obviously at this time of the year in the west of Ireland, the winter time in the west of Ireland, blows quite a lot, and it's not really conducive to visitor golf.
Yeah, yeah. But you do get a lot of visitors over here. So you focus on a lot of Americans coming.
Yeah, I have to say, since Fiona came, and her skill is social media, and you've met Sarah inside the shop today, and the other girls, they're all brilliant on social media. And we're gone from, between doing the shows and the podcast like this, we're gone from 2,500 rounds in 2018 to 13,500 rounds last year, visitor rounds of golf. And that has just lifted the whole place.
Yeah. So
we're not looking over the shoulder for the few bob that we used to have to do.
Yeah.
We don't have the sleepless nights anymore,
no.
But we did have them. And it's just great that we can invest in the course and make sure that people have a great time when they come here.
Just seeing a group go through there. Caddies? You got caddies on board here?
We've a very small pool of caddies.
Yeah.
And they're very busy all summer. And they're members of the Belmullet Golf Club.
Yeah.
And the four gone by there are four Americans who had a four caddy with them for the day to show them around.
Well, and needed on some of them.
Well, look, there are blind shots here. And
which is natural links.
Yeah, and I think it's worthwhile having a caddy just to go with the group.
Yeah.
You don't need a caddy to carry everybody doesn't need a caddy to carry their bag, but certainly bring one with the group and show you where you're going.
Mm. One of your toughest times is obviously, and as most golf clubs went through, was the COVID time.
Yeah, COVID in its own right. I mean, I'll give you an example of COVID. One of our great footballers here in this country who played GAA came to me during COVID and he said, could I play golf? And it was one of the windows when we were open.
Yeah.
And I said, have you got 100 quid? And he said, I have. He said, well, I said, you can play as much golf now as you want for the remainder of the year in June until the end of the year. And he, as a result of that, got 70 others of his own age group in the 20s to come and play golf. And of that, 40 of them joined the golf club.
Fantastic.
So that in this area where they only had about 80 or 90 members, it was an additional 40 as a result of COVID.
Yeah.
The international visitors, we did a few podcasts during COVID. We were high and dry financially.
Yeah.
And some of those went out in the States and right around the world, indeed the UK as well. And the response we got was enormous in terms of buying stuff from the shop just to keep our head above water.
Yeah.
And we could never be thankful to the golfing community for looking after
amazing
us that.
Support.
And then they eventually came. Amazing support.
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether it was financial or just a letter to say, we wish you well.
Yeah.
One was as important as the other.
We are lucky in this game, aren't we?
Very, very lucky.
The support that we get, the
very
communities
lucky
that we create are fantastic.
The golfing community is small.
Yeah.
But by God, do they look after one another.
Yeah.
They do.
And I'm a PGA member, and I know the PGA have been here a number of times. You've hosted some PGA championships here over in Ireland. So is that something you want to continue on with, that sort of...
Yeah, absolutely. We've had the Irish PGA Championship here, which was great for the town.
Yeah.
Filled the beds and fill the pubs and the restaurants, which are fantastic in town. And we've done that now for 3 years, so they obviously wanted to take a break, which I'm quite entitled to. And we're now looking at a Legends Tour. That's what we would like next year.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
With Paul McGinley here, who picked the 10th hole here as one of the best along the Wild Atlantic Way. And, yeah, to get the Legends here next would be, that's our goal next. We put out the feelers for that. And then after that, who knows, an Irish Open for Belmullet. And Karen Golflinks will be just fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Now, there's one area just outside this golf club that is, you mentioned it on the first tee, which is, you call it the lobster pot. Just give me a bit of an insight into what the lobster pot actually is.
Well, the lobster pot is 100 years old. It's an oldest pub in Belmullet. It's a long, narrow pub, but beautiful old furniture. The most wonderful, hospitable individual you ever meet in your life, in Páirc Conroy. He's just an extraordinary guy. He's the guy I met first when I arrived here the first night. When I was ready to go home to Dublin, I met him, and the first point was on the house, and he just made me feel so welcome. And that's the way he makes feel all golfers. Everybody goes down there. There's buses stop in the middle of the street just to run into Páirc's and get a pint. But all the pubs in town are good, but Páirc's is just unique to the golfers. It's our 19th hole. They have a pint upstairs in the golf club, but then they run into Páirc's. And there's nobody has ever said a bad word about going into that pub. He is just unique. I don't think you get him anywhere in the world.
And once you go in, you can't get out.
Once you go in, you can't get out. That's it.
Back to the golf course quickly to finish this off. A number of signature holes that we were talking about before I even got out onto the golf course. Just, can you run me through just a couple of those now to just share with us? Which are your kind of favourites and why?
Well, I think the best golf hole on the golf course is the original 17th of the Hackett course. I think that's just an incredibly difficult hole. Narrow fairway to hit. If you don't hit the fairway, you're down in a big gully, right or left. So you have to get that very, very, it's real precision driving. And then you have a most narrow entrance into a long, narrow green with, again, a huge fall off on the right and a bad big dune on the left. So It's a hole worthy, I would say, of any British Open. It's just, it's certainly our iconic here. The snake that we call the eighth Wild Atlantic Dunes, a par five, you don't see it, you're not up on top of it. For the average golfer, it's a drive, a 3-wood, maybe a 5-wood.
Yeah.
For the good golfer, it's a risk and reward shot, drive, and you can go across the mound, go across the high dune. If you get it wrong, you're gone. Get it right, you have a birdie. Fantastic hole. Again, the Paul McGinley hole, the 10th. Very similar to Duluth in the Royal Portrush, except our chasm is on the right, on the left-hand side. Theirs is on the right. 208 yards, par 3. You know, it can be anything from a 7-iron one day to a driver the next, depending on the wind factor. There's no real hole out there that you'd ever say is a bad hole. It's just, it's phenomenal. And we have to pinch ourselves so much here because so many come in and tell us just every hole is just outstanding. And, you know, they are. We're blessed.
Well, we've had a fantastic day here at Cairn Golf Links. And I can't thank you enough, not just meeting you and spending some time with you, but the hospitality that you and your staff have shared with us has been brilliant. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dan, very much for coming.
I look forward to coming back here again very soon.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Anytime. Thanks a million.
Well, it's always a delight to catch up with anybody from any golf club. But obviously, the passion, the enthusiasm that comes out of Jerry is just fantastic, isn't it?
You need people involved in golf clubs like that. You need several of them to, you know, he's proactive. He's trying to build that club up. He's trying to elevate it to the next level, isn't he? Which is great to see. And yeah, like I said, you need people like that. They've got some good volunteers there. They've got a plan as well, haven't they? And it works. That. The way it is, it just all works, and it's great to see. And it's another example of how you can make a golf club or a golf course, which is basically in the middle of nowhere, so rural and so out on its own, and it's survived and it will continue to survive and thrive.
I want to say it's unique in the fact that
it was natural, wasn't it? More natural than
no machines used to create it. But then I look back on a lot of Lynx golf courses though that were built in the 100 years ago, let's say.
Yeah.
And that would have been the same.
We didn't have the machinery.
You didn't have the machinery
and the manpower to do what they do now, and how they can almost build a golf course. I mean, they do in the Middle East don't they? They build it overnight almost.
Yeah.
Like move so sand, much earth yeah. and sand and get it all ready and done in no time. Whereas that was a massive project which took 8 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean that's phenomenal really, and it's exactly how it would have been when it was built, and it's so natural and everything about it's natural. Not as well, like I would say, Enniscrone was, I'd not say better maintained, but it was maintained. This was slightly more. It was slightly more natural, wasn't it? And it was slightly, yeah. I'd say rough, but Lynx does have that like sort of look to it, and it was very much like a rugged old style Lynx golf course, yeah. which was again. Yeah.
It was rugged old land.
Oh, yeah. It was
battered by the elements.
And it was just a phenomenal golf course. That, yeah. You're going to ask me what my favourite hole was. What was your favourite hole?
Well, my favourite hole was when we had our little antiques of talk about the Himalayas at St. Enoch.
Oh, that par three.
And we played that par yeah. three and we went up the top yeah. of that hill and played off the top of the dune and managed to found this bunker. What's funny yeah. is I found a golf ball up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe anyone got up there. But I thought that par three, and I can't remember, I think it was about the 11th or 12th hole,
yeah,
which was a par three down the hill. Yeah. I just thought it was just spectacular, yeah. absolutely spectacular. Love that massive dune to the right of it. Love the backdrop behind it.
Yeah.
There was many holes that you could choose. And yeah, Jerry talks about some of the others, like the 10th and yeah. 17 and the par five, the snake hole. You know, even that par three before that snake hole, down the hill drop hole was yeah. just beautiful, wasn't it?
There wasn't a bad hole on the golf course.
There wasn't a bad hole.
Considering how old the golf course is. And yeah. I mean, generally you go and play an older golf course and you're like, this hole hasn't stood the test of time. You yeah. look at it, and think, they need to put the tee further back or that bunker's not in play and this is and yeah. that. But there was no hole which I looked outdated. It was just... If well you'd have presented. Said it was built yesterday and it was designed yesterday, you'd have said, oh, yeah, it's perfectly designed. And, all credit to them. It is they've got something pretty spectacular there.
They do, absolutely. And it will get more and more people there. And then the last day, which was perfect, because we were a bit tired by the time you get to the last day that we're there.
Yeah.
In the Westport area. We played Westport Golf Club.
Yeah.
And...
I didn't mind that journey.
No, that was literally 5 minutes around the yeah. corner, which was perfect for work, for us that day. But Westport did not let us down either, did it?
No, it was nice to have something a little bit different, and it just sells the area, doesn't it? The fact that there is variety on that coast.
Yeah.
That if you're not a massive fan of Lynx and you want to play more inland golf courses, there's those options.
Yeah.
And if you're a massive fan of Lynx, then you've got some of the most spectacular Lynx golf courses in the world.
Yeah.
But no, Westport was front nine was an 8 out of 10 for me. It was good.
Yeah.
But get onto the back nine, it's an 11 out of 10 for me. It was so good. Some of those holes.
Absolutely amazing, weren't they?
Yeah, I was like if we'd have just played the front nine, it'd have been two nines like the front nine, it's still a great golf course. And I was a little bit disappointed. I know we just didn't know the course. He went, you do the front nine today, I'll do the back nine. It was just a 50-50 toss-up. But I was almost disappointed that I didn't get that back nine.
Yeah.
Because it was so, so good.
Yeah, it was good.
Some brilliant golf holes, some stunning scenery, and just, yeah, as good as I'd played a back nine for a while, really, as an inland golf course.
But you say that, and you know, we talked to the captain. He took me out and helped me do some droning actually around the golf course, and it was again just a beautiful welcome, wasn't it? Fantastic yeah, welcome like, by again, everybody.
All three courses couldn't be more welcoming. But they invested time with us, didn't they? Which was great. We don't always get that, unfortunately. Not necessarily the golf club's fault, but it was just red carpet treatment. But it was just. It just gives a little bit of extra flavour to our videos and our vlogs. When we get that additional information, you get treated well. It makes it like we got one of the best jobs in the world.
Yeah.
But it just elevates our job or what we do when you get that much help and that much time invested in us.
Yeah. And I actually, for me, I really enjoyed the front nine. And
I wasn't criticising.
But I think if you broke it down from hole to hole to hole as you meandered your way around there, I thought, if you really look at each hole, they all ask the questions.
Yeah.
And where I think people probably, let's say, if they do knock it, it would be that the holes are a little bit up and down. So you kind of go up, I think it's up four, down five, up six. They kind of, but then after that, you get up seven.
Yeah.
You get up and then you play eight, which was probably my favourite hole on the golf course.
Yeah, it's a great, that's a hard hole. It's a great hole.
And then birdie. Nine, my birdie hole, yeah. And then nine, the par three, back up to the clubhouse.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, considering that the majority of people talk about the back nine on that golf course, I thought that the first six holes, for sure, what they do is they ease you in to something that's going to be.
I was just literally just exactly what I said. It was probably how you'd want, if I was designing a golf course, you'd want not easy first six holes, but you could get a score going. They get you into the round. You've warmed up. Yeah. They're not the most challenging. I would say probably, you know, four out of the six were reasonably easy holes for us. You know, you're looking at pars and birdies. Like, you could easily be under par on the first six holes there, but the back nine was tough. And you're
holding on for dear life.
Yeah, so I mean, you've got your score and you're like, right, come on, let's keep this together. I mean, Churston's completely the opposite. You're trying to hold on for dear life on the front nine to give yourself any chance on the back nine. Yeah. And sometimes you can be so far out of it, the back nine's irrelevant. Whereas I feel that Westport had it perfectly, that you could get your score going out, could easily get it under par, and then back nine, I mean, if you shot level, if I shot two or three over par back nine, I would be more than happy with that.
Three things that jumped out to me about Westport.
I know what you're going to say.
The views were to die for.
A massive
and
mountain.
Absolutely fantastic. The mountain, and I'm classing that as part one, one thing because of the views.
Fair enough. I thought you'd have given it a separate. Because you were up for walking up the top of that, weren't you?
Yeah. Then I realised, you realise how big it is. You're like, no. The second thing was the greens were the best greens that I've putted on for the last couple of years on a Parkland golf course. They were absolutely fantastic. So true. Quick enough, but fair enough, weren't they? Yeah. They were quick but fair, because I think the greens can get a bit undulating around there and there's subtle breaks going on. So I love the greens. And then the final part, which we did and we made a video out of it, was the par three little pitch and putt course that they've got there as you drive in up the driveway.
More courses need to do that.
100%. Like, not one hole on that putt, that nine-hole par three course, was any more than 45 yards.
It wasn't even, I mean, the amount of space that actually took up, like, you could have that, as most golf courses have got enough room space and facilities to put that in there. Yeah. And it's just a perfect facility if you just want to, if you've got half an hour, 20 minutes before you even tee off, a little bit of short game work but make it competitive. Juniors can play it. If your golf course is shut for some particular reason, you've still got the option of going out and playing golf. And I just, like that, I could imagine taking the family there who haven't played golf before and go, come on, we're going out to the golf club today, we'll play the little nine, we'll play that, we'll have a little bit of lunch.
100%.
It's absolutely brilliant. Like, why is there not more of that?
Should be more of that.
Like, I don't understand it.
Parents could take their kids up there, they can let the kids run riot, and then they can go and have their drinks or have food or whatever it is that they want to do.
It was brilliant.
I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And obviously the video we've put out for that, we had some fun around there. That's the key. Had some fun. It allows people to, as you said, work on this short game. It also allows people to be introduced to the game of golf.
Yeah.
But also be introduced to the game of golf at a golf facility, at a golf course, which
that's
is a
the
members
key,
golf.
That's the key point.
Yeah.
Because you're then in that environment. A pitch and putt's brilliant, and that's how I started playing the local pitch and putts. There was three or four around this area. Now I think there's only one or two. Obviously, Cayman's gone in there as well, but that's a different style of golf. But you're actually in a golf environment, which is the number one factor why I think people don't want to play golf or don't play golf and never get that stage.
Yeah.
Is because it's intimidating going to a golf club and not welcoming. Whereas that is an absolute brilliant way to get people there. They're there, they see how the stereotypical way of a golf club is perceived as is not as bad as what people think, and it's getting better.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're in the golf course and they progress from that to playing golf, becoming members, spending time at the golf club, and that can only be a positive.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was Westport. Then the final jaunt home we decided that as we were going to be in Ireland for a little while, we would try and so it was a little bit away from now from golf in Ireland. We finished that
project
with them, yeah. And then we decided on the way home that there was an opportunity to go to Portmarnock, which is the Portmarnock Resort, and play the Jameson Links.
Yeah.
Now I played Portmarnock Resort. No, I played Portmarnock Links about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. 5 years ago.
I was about 15 years, I think.
Yeah, you've played it before. You went over there on a stag do and played it. So what they did is they rebranded it.
Yeah.
Because I suppose the problem you've got there is that you've got Portmarnock Golf Club across the way.
Yeah.
Now, the Jameson Links at Portmarnock Resort is owned by the Jameson family. It was always owned by the Jameson family. Jameson family, the whiskey distillers.
Yeah.
Whiskey family. They, many moons ago, they provided the land to create Portmarnock Links.
Yeah.
Okay. So Portmarnock Links was created. And I think later on down the road, the Jameson family decided to build the links there as well.
Yeah.
Which is the Portmarnock Links.
Because there's a graveyard, which is literally...
On
the first hole. So yeah. You literally just, if you walk to the right of the first, it backs onto the golf course. And some of the graves in there are the Jamesons. Yeah, yeah, basically they're buried in there. So it's the connection with that and being so close to the golf course.
Yeah, you're kind of drawing it off the first tee, aren't you, as the ideal shape of shot that you're trying to look for down there. So we decided to stop for one night. We played two rounds of golf.
Stayed in the hotel, didn't we?
We stayed in the hotel, which is first
phenomenal,
class.
Phenomenal, yeah.
Like, absolutely first class.
Yeah.
And day one, so we drove there, which was about three and a half hours to get over. Because obviously, Portmarnock is, I think, slightly north of Dublin. And so we dropped in there. We teed it up in the afternoon and we did the break par series, didn't we?
Yeah.
Around the links course, and Paul, the head pro director of golf, he actually showed us around, because once they'd rebranded it to the Jameson Links, they also changed the layout of the golf course to a point. Like, there were some holes that I remember, but there was a number of holes in there that they've moved around or jumped around with the links conditions, we say, or the links holes have been changed. And so we did the break par series. That golf course just grew. Like, I knew it was a decent golf course.
Yeah.
Like, I knew there were some great, great holes there, but I never walked away from that golf course initially going, wow. I just thought, yeah, it's a nice links golf course. Mm. However, the more I played it, and I know we played it twice, but the more I played it and the more I experienced it, I thought, this is phenomenal. Such a great golf course.
Yeah. I remember it, and I remember it being, like you said, I remember it being really good, and thinking, oh, this is a course I'd like to play. But when I went there, it was somewhere that I was, after I'd played it once or twice, and I didn't play particularly well around there, I was like, oh my God, I could play all my golf here. Like, if they said to you, pick, you know, somewhere where you had to, it'd be in my top sort of five places where I would go and play it. I mean, it was in cracking condition.
Yeah.
The ground, it was just well looked after. The new holes are really, really good. They're an upgrade on what was there previously. Again, not a bad hole. A tough, tough golf course.
Yeah.
But a fair golf course. If you're hitting it well, it's scorable. If you're not hitting it well, which I wasn't, then you can rack up big numbers, and it can make you look very average. But yeah, what a great golf course.
One thing that jumped out to me about it was... the bunkering on links golf courses are an interesting one for me, because there's been a shift. There's always these transitions when you look at links golf courses, and it's always the bunkering that generally gets looked at.
Yeah.
You're generally either going to get more ruggedy kind of style bunkers, which have lots of grass around the top of them.
Yeah.
They're cut in a way which looks a bit rough and ready. Or you get bunkers that are pot bunkers that are... revetting on the face, very round edges to them, quite clean cut type of bunkers, which is And what you do is you get golf courses that, that either are going through a transition of coming, that going back to their roots, which was, it used to be a rugged kind of bunker style golf course. And now they went then in the, maybe in the 50s, 60s and 70s, they moved into pot bunkers, more rounded style bunkers. And then you start to see this transition of bringing them back. If you think about Trevose, that's a golf course that, that was, when I first started playing Trevose 15, 20 years ago, let's say, there was a lot more pot bunkers around Trevose, and they've brought it very much back to that sort of natural, rugged type style bunkering around the golf course.
To me, you've got to have one or the other.
Have one or the other.
Don't have a mixture of the two. I don't think it works.
No.
But it's got to be one or the other for me.
And I think a lot of Lynx golf courses do get it wrong, where they do try and create maybe their fairway areas of more fairway bunkers are more rugged, and then they go more pot around the greens. I'm a big fan of either choosing one or the other.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
Jameson Lynx have gone very much around the more potted style of bunker, lots of revetting.
Which worked there, I think.
Beautifully.
Because it was so well manicured, and even like the paths being, they were grass paths cut through the dunes, and it just worked. It worked so well with that style being, if it was slightly like you said, slightly more natural, a bit like your Khan, then I would think that the old style bungers would have suited it. If they'd have stuck those pot bungers, which are really manicured and built up, and you know how they do the turf, they lay the turf to get it that particular look, I don't think that would have worked.
No.
And I just feel like that they had the right style of bungers, and they were in good places.
Yeah,
they weren't unfair bungers.
No, well-positioned.
Well-positioned, but fair.
Yeah. And I think that golf course is one of those golf courses where, and don't get me wrong, they've had Challenge Tour events there and big amateur events, I'm sure, in the past around there. And they can make that golf course as tough as they want it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that golf course is a resort-style golf course, no different to Trevose, as an example, where, you know, pace of play is important. You know, they need to get people around the golf course, but they also want to make sure that people don't, they don't get blown off the golf course and never want to play it again or never want to play links again, you know, because it can happen. Some golf courses can make you get that sense of like, oh, do I want to go and tee it out 100%. There again?
Yeah.
So I think they've nailed it there. When I was doing the filming or the video for it and editing it and then going through all the drone footage that I managed to get access to and things like that, I thought, oh my goodness, like I'm going from hole to hole to hole going, yeah, I remember that hole was great.
Yeah.
Hole, that hole, oh my goodness, that hole. And then I'm like, I walk off and I'm like, there wasn't a bad hole out there.
No.
I know you can say that a lot about golf courses, and there is always one or two holes that jump out and go, yeah, I'd change that. But the changes that they've made on that golf course with some of the holes, certainly, you know, from kind of 7 and 8 onwards kind of thing, right the way around to, they've changed 17, 18's the same, 16, 18
is a great finishing hole.
Yeah,
it's an intimidating tee shot.
Really is, yeah.
And just a great finishing hole when you play up to that green. And I'd totally agree with that because, you know, I'm quite happy to say if I don't like a golf hole or I don't like thing. And like my favourite course, down in the southwest, St Enadoc, and there's a couple of holes on that golf course which I think are absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
Like, they're just bad holes.
Let it down.
Stop it being, you know, one of... Yeah, but it's still my favourite golf course, but it's got... But, poor, like, Jameson Lynx, I couldn't really think of a bad hole. Or a hole I go, that's not a great hole.
Favourite part about it?
The fact that there was a... halfway house, but it wasn't halfway, it was more like quarter way. You could get it from lots of different angles. I always think a good halfway house should be attacked from numerous holes, and you could probably attack that from 3 or 4, maybe 5. I mean, Al would have probably got 6 or 7 visits in if we'd have let him.
He could have got 6 or 7 pints down him by the time they got, the time 6 or 7 pints of Guinness. We hit it twice.
Yeah.
So we got a pint of Guinness after 8, and then there was a pint of Guinness then after 12.
But you could have hit it more times.
You could have smashed
it.
You got near it.
You got within walking distance of it. I'm not holding up much play and stuff. No. But
you could be very wobbly wheeled by the time you finished there, couldn't you? And again,
do you think they must have obviously planned the layout and where they were putting that to coincide with finishing holes and stuff to get to a couple of visits in?
100%.
You're maybe not doubling the amount of money you take, but you're definitely increasing it by maybe a third, aren't you? There's going to be people that are going to be visiting that twice, not just the once.
100%. If
clever,
if
you, isn't it? Good, yeah, good, yeah. Good commercial marketing, that, isn't it?
Simple.
Yeah, simple, but really effective.
Absolutely simple. When I go around some golf courses and you see that the golf club, like I was at Manchester Golf Club the other day, yeah, and the halfway hut's shut.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it opens up, only opens on a Saturday. And I'm thinking to myself,
no.
Like, you've got to build that. Yeah. You've got to build that with the members. They've got to know that they can go out and tee off and yeah, know it'd be open. Once they get that, then the money just starts to roll in from it. Because
Trevose
is
always
right,
open.
Trevose is perfect. It's one of my favourites. Sunningdale, one of my favourites. But now Jameson Links with a little port. It's a little port cabin style one.
Again, nicely
fits in beautifully, doesn't it?
Nicely in amongst the dunes.
Yeah,
it's not like
hidden.
It stands out. It's, you walk around the corner and there it is. And it's not in your face. It's just nicely done, isn't it?
It is nicely done. And then the second day, obviously, we did the break par series, which
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, is break par fun?
No, not break par. We meant the second day. We did.
Second day, yeah.
Texas Scramble.
Texas Scramble. So we did the scramble break with 60. Alex Edges.
Yeah,
which. Your first time meeting Al?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly how he comes across, exactly on camera like he's off camera.
Yeah.
There's no fakery. That's a good word, isn't it? No fakery. Because people do, I won't name names, but people change when a camera is switched on, and they can change, they very much are different in front of the camera to what you see, to what they are like in real life. But he is down to earth.
What you see
is exactly what you get, and there's no, you know, I've spoke to him on the phone a couple of times when we've been in the van and stuff. I know you got quite close to him. You've done quite a bit of film with him, but it was like I'd known him for 25 years, and like I would have been. I mean, I went in the buggy with him just to get to know him a little bit better, but I could easily have never met him and gone out for a pint with him. He's that sort of. And had a great time. He's just a good lad, isn't he? He's just...
How far... Does he hit the ball further than you thought he would?
No, I thought he'd hit it further.
Do you?
Yeah. He does send it out there when he catches it, but...
I just don't think he had the right driver set.
No, because he borrowed yours, didn't he?
He was borrowing mine in the end. And he wrenched mine down, which I haven't got it back into the right set. Oh, yeah. So...
No, but a good golfer. A really good golfer. Good striker. Yeah. He would benefit by you being on his golf bag. If he ever wanted to be a serious player, he needs to invest in you as a caddy.
Yeah. Because he does listen to
you. He does listen to you. That's amazing.
He's the only person in the world that listens to
me. I was going to say, I can't think of anyone else who does.
What do you think here, Dan? Oh, I think a little wedge in here. 9-9.
Yeah. What are you hitting there? You literally, 3 or 4 times, you talked about what he was hitting, which, I mean, that's you've got to have some testicular fortitude to stand up there and go, nah, that's the wrong club.
And then he's twice as big as me.
And then he actually agreed with you and then hit it and then hit it like a worldie and it was the right club. You were right every single time. It wasn't like...
Yeah.
And he actually believed and trusted you. It was so funny. Like, normally go, nah, I'm hitting this. I'm like, no, Dan, I'm hitting what I want to hit. Let me hit this.
Just and go away. Yeah. Go away and let me do what I want to do.
Yeah, but he was like listening to you. It was amazing. Like,
isn't it?
Yeah. I just don't know.
I think that's why we get on so well. Because... Nobody else has ever listened to me, so it was quite nice,
yeah. I'm looking forward to those videos coming out.
They will be fun.
We're going to run them on the same day, so they're going to be like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, so there'll be a nice continuation. So if you on that particular day, which we will advertise and let you know, but that is going to be get your popcorn out or sit in front of the TV and enjoy that. Make sure you've got no plans on that day. Because that is a video well worth, well, three videos well worth watching.
Well, I think our Irish adventure was well worth doing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had a really good time. We were well looked after. Thanks to Golfing Ireland for what they did and what set up. Thank you for yourself for getting me involved and inviting me. I had a great trip. It was brilliant.
It was a great trip.
It was a good, somewhere I would never have gone that far west. And I'd have missed out. And if you haven't been that far west and you haven't played any of those golf courses, then I suggest if you've got a little trip coming up or you've got space for a trip, then definitely consider that area.
100%. Put it on your list because it's got to be
somewhere I definitely want to revisit. And I mean, I've had quite a few messages of people, not only ones people that live in Ireland that watched the channel or followed on social media, but they've said, like, you should have played this course, you should have gone there. And they're naming, I've had probably a dozen different courses around that particular area that we just didn't have the time, and it was obviously Golfing Ireland that arranged those particular venues. But yeah, I definitely, if the opportunity comes, I definitely want to go back to Western Ireland and play some of those other great golf courses that are clearly on that coast.
Well, I think that's been a nice little wrap-up of our little Irish adventure, Bernie.
Yeah.
Nice little podcast to see it off and then
tick
hopefully
a box.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to go back out there at some stage again. I'm sure Golf and Ireland are keen for us to do some other stuff. So
yeah, we didn't upset anyone, did we, anything? No.
No.
It's amazing, isn't it?
No. I lost my rangefinder at Enniscrone, which has now been safely returned to me.
Did you get it back, did you?
Yeah, one of the greenkeepers found it, handed it in.
Where was it?
What? Absolutely no idea. But we lost it in the wilderness there somewhere,
that,
didn't we?
That just sums up Ireland for me.
That perfect.
Because that wouldn't happen in a lot of places. That'd have been on eBay.
Absolutely right. Well, yeah. I just want to take this opportunity to thank you all for listening to this Behind Golf podcast. Bernie, thanks for your time. Thanks for wrapping it up with me. And we'll see everyone again very soon.